Thanks for listening to the best of The Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
It's time to start Baker Mayfield. What are you waiting for?
Wait a minute. I'm going to stop you right in your tracks. That's based on what? If they had a decent kicker, Chris Broussard, they would be 2-0. It's not the quarterback play. It's the kicking game that has cost Cleveland. And the whole notion of Baker Mayfield was that guy, like Sam Darnold is for the Jets, who's thrown for more yards than anybody else in his first two games at his age, he would be the quarterback if he was that all that and a bag of chips. He's not that, and that's why he's watching on the sidelines.
So what are you saying? They've already realized they made a mistake?
No, but he's not that guy on that team.
To them, he's that guy?
He's not that guy because he's not playing.
He should be. He's not behind Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, who kept Rodgers on the bench for years.
For about almost 4 years.
He's behind Tyrod Taylor, who's completing 53% of his passes, throwing for 222 yards a game. Maybe if they had more offense, they wouldn't have been in those situations to put it all on
Chris,
the kicker's
stop.
Leg.
Stop I'm it saying, right now. I, stop.
I'm, no.
That's what? Not the reason why they've lost
Tyrod's
the game.
Fine, but he's pedestrian. He's not behind Ben Roethlisberger. At best, with Tyrod Taylor, Rob, where are they going?
Where are they going this
year?
Where are they going with Baker Mayfield?
But Baker Mayfield is your future.
Yeah, but the only problem
Tyrod
is...
Tyrod Taylor's not your future?
Chris, if he was good enough, he would be in there. You know what
he
football is?
He is good enough. Hugh Jackson hadn't even given him a shot. He was saying from day one, he's not going to be the starting quarterback.
Well, because they don't believe that he's ready to be that guy. Because it doesn't make sense to me. Football is about... who can help us win today? If Baker Mayfield was that guy, the same way the Jets could have said, no, let's let Sam Darnold take his time. We have Josh McCown. He's a veteran. He was pretty good. He had a good year last year. We have a pretty decent team.
Why didn't they?
Because Sam Darnold's the real deal, and they know they got a gem.
I agree Sam Darnold is the real deal. I think he's better than Baker Mayfield. I think the Browns made a mistake by not taking him. I think the Giants definitely made a mistake by not taking
him.
However, don't act like he's throwing the ball like Peyton Manning in his prime. I mean, Darnold has made some mistakes. Do they have a win yet?
They beat the Lions. Wait a minute. They beat the Lions in Detroit.
That's why I said, is that considered a win?
Oh, look at you now. Wow.
No, but seriously.
They blew
week,
the Lions
look,
out. They scored 48 points.
I like Darnold, but don't act like... you know, he's been throwing for 400 yards a game.
Chris, he threw
he's
for three.
Growing. The Jets have made the decision that he's our future. He's played well. Don't get me wrong.
Rob
he hasn't
G.
played fantastic,
Rob
but he's
G.
played well for a rookie.
Hold on, let's bring in Rob G. Can you look up Sam Darnold? Didn't he throw for 343? I know they couldn't get in the end zone.
I said
against
300 yards a game.
Against Miami. He had almost 200 in game one, but he had 340.
Almost 200.
Was it 343? Well, but was it such a blowout?
He's averaging 300 a game.
He threw for 334 yards in his second game.
I don't want this to become Darnold versus Mayfield. What I'm saying is... Baker Mayfield is your future in Cleveland. At best, you're going to be 500 this year, at best. And I don't even think they get there. I think most people think they don't get there. You don't get the 500 with Tyrod Taylor. So what are you waiting for? We had Tony Dungy on Monday. And he said, I think it's always best for guys to play. Peyton Manning led the league in interceptions as a rookie. Fine. He's a rookie. We get it. But he was the future, so they went with him. Baker Mayfield is definitely the future. What are you waiting for?
You're waiting for him to show you, like in the preseason games and in practice,
that he's that bad guy. I mean, he was. I can make an argument that he was basically as good as Taylor in the preseason. Can I not?
But it doesn't make any sense. Chris, they watch him every day. If they really believed they had some magic with him, he would be in the starting lineup, because you're right. The future is now. The only way you learn how to play is by being out there playing in games. That's how you do it. So I agree with that. But I'm telling you that if the coaching staff really believed he was the guy, he'd be out there. They didn't win the Super Bowl last year, and they're like, well, we're not going to break in a rookie quarterback. No, they didn't win a game.
I could argue that Hugh is just trying to win a few games to save his job.
No, but wait a minute. So you're saying if Hugh—
it's not about this season. You know it.
It is about this season.
No, because even at best this season, you're going to win about 6 or 7 games.
But you only won one game in the last 2 years, so it is about this.
So they're supposed to get overjoyed about 6 or 7
wins
with a guy that you know is not going to be your quarterback going forward. If you win, let's say best case scenario, they go 7-9, obviously missed the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor. Next year you're coming in, and you're not starting over because your defense is solid and you got some decent running backs, and obviously you still got, you know, pretty good receivers and all that. But with a new quarterback, in some sense, I'm starting over. Get him in now. Even most people think by second half of the season, Mayfield's going to be playing anyway. So what are you waiting for? It's a different NFL, Rob. It's not always about now sitting the rookie. Nope. A lot of these rookies we've seen step in and play well right away.
And there are other guys who don't. He wasn't the only rookie who they didn't put in. We saw in Buffalo and in Arizona where those rookie quarterbacks haven't gotten in. And my point is only that if they really believed that he was that guy off the bat and he could help them win ASAP right away, you put him in and he's bad. Here you are with another horrible season.
What if he's bad? What if he's bad? What's the worst case scenario?
Nothing. Then you got to take him out again. Then you got to take him out. Yes, you do.
No, you don't. We expect him to be bad. Josh Allen starting in Buffalo now. He's not lighting it up.
Yeah, but the difference between—
but we're not holding that against him. Jared Goff, when he was in L.A., rookie year, horrible. Now, I know a lot of it was the coach, Jeff Fisher. But still, it's what we expect from our rookie. They didn't give up on Goff because he was bad.
But, Chris, the difference in Buffalo was they've been awful. Their quarterback play
they made the Peterman. What, last year? Weren't they in the playoffs
last
year?
No, but Peterman started as quarterback. Come on now. It was a character from Seinfeld. Is quarterback in
Peterman,
the Buffalo Bills.
Who now, granted, this was a bad move, but you giving the coaching staff credit because they see him every day. That coaching staff in Buffalo saw Peterman and Tyrod Taylor every day last year, and they decided to bench Taylor and put Peterman. It was ridiculous because Peter went out there and threw five interceptions
in the first half. I know.
But think about it. They thought he was better than Tyrod, a guy that threw 5 interceptions in the first half. Look, if he was behind an all-pro or even, you know, a solid, you know, a really good veteran, I would see it. And your team was, you know, thinking we might be able to make the playoffs. But you're rebuilding.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Did you see this Troy Aikman? I'm not even going to call it a Twitter beef because it really didn't escalate. But a radio host in Buffalo where Ryan Fitzpatrick was very mediocre, if that. Earlier in his career, Joe DiBiase tweets last night. This is the direct tweet. I'm reading it. Ryan Fitzpatrick has 16 more passing TDs in his career than Hall of Famer. And he puts Hall of Famer in quotes. Troy Aikman in 44 less starts. Now, that was a shot. Sometimes you could pass that off as, hey, I'm just putting a fact out there. But he put Hall of Famer in quotes as if Troy Aikman didn't really deserve it. And Troy Aikman responds, who cares? Now, I don't know Joe DiBiase, and I'm sure he does a great job at what he does. But, Rob, I'm wondering, is he 22 years old? Like
it might be a part of the millennials who only look at numbers and they don't look at winning and other stuff that goes that plays a part in it. And I think that that's the biggest thing. He might be 22 years old.
And it's not even just numbers, because you sized it up well. Winning obviously is more important than just putting up a bunch of individual numbers.
Always has been.
However, yeah, but we're not even talking about that. Let's just leave winning out and look at numbers. You can't compare today's numbers in the NFL passing for quarterbacks to the numbers of yesteryear. I mean, nowadays, if a guy doesn't throw for 4,000 yards, he's a joke, right? You got some guys throwing for 5,000. Back in the day, it was rare. John Elway threw for 4,000 yards once.
Well, because
Joe Montana
right.
never threw for 4,000 yards.
Because you used to run the football. It was a different game, and now it's all about passing. It's a passing league. Running backs have been neutralized or – you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah. The running back used to be – you know, that was the glory position, the glamour position in the NFL. And now it's not.
It's a quarterback league now, and so some of the numbers are like are totally inflated. And also, you have to look at what Troy Aikman did with those Cowboys. They won 3 Super Bowls. Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Is this mic on? Hello? I mean, seriously.
Right.
Like to even put Fitzpatrick's name in the same sentence with Troy Aikman is comical. It's comical.
Well, especially when you put it in there as the superior one. I mean, it's embarrassingly bad. And it again, I don't know what this guy, you know, I guess he does a good job, but it does show a lack of knowledge of the sport and the way things are changing. You brought up the change in style as far as running backs used to be a more integral part of a team's offense. Quarterbacks didn't throw the ball as much. But let's go to the rules, too. Back in the day, 80s, 90s, certainly the 70s, early 2000s, when Aikman played, in the 90s, quarterbacks were like football. They were football players.
Right.
Meaning they didn't have all these special rules to protect them. You could hit them low. You could hit them high. You could hit them in the midsection. You could land your body on them. You could pick them up and slam. I mean, all this stuff today, even the receivers, you could hit them more down the field. You could be more physical with them. You certainly could clean their clock as they're going across the middle.
And now you have things where it's in the grasp. You don't even have to totally, you know what I mean? Bring the quarterback down. If you grab his jersey, and the referee will blow the play dead to preserve the quarterback. So quarterbacks have a lot more leeway and an easier road.
It just made it so much easier for
absolutely.
Them. They're like playing in a bubble almost, you know, and you just give them time and you protect them. And I get it. It's business. You know, it makes a game more exciting when the quarterbacks are healthy and throwing for all these yards. But it's like comparing, if you go to the NBA, and Larry Bird, clearly one of the greatest shooters of all time, right?
Yes, no doubt about it.
Unquestionably. But if you compare
Larry
Bird.
And I covered Larry Bird during his career, during the heyday. I was covering the NBA starting back in 1987.
Right. When you look at Larry Bird's three-point shooting percentage, it wasn't great. If you just look at the numbers and say, you know, I don't know. Kawhi Leonard is shooting 38-39% from 3-point range. He's a better shooter than Larry Bird. I mean, that's really the equivalent of what this tweet was saying.
877-99 on Fox. Does this have any validity? I know there's a lot of millennials out there, but really, does anybody look at Fitzpatrick and really think that his numbers are better than Troy Aikman? And you're discounting, how many big games did Fitzpatrick play in? Do you know what I mean? Like where you're down by 3 touchdowns in the first quarter and you get to just throw the rest of the game. I mean,
right,
seriously.
I don't even think that this guy that tweeted this thinks Ryan Fitzpatrick. I, I can't. I'm gonna give him more.
No. But he wouldn't have put it out there.
Patrick is better than Troy Aikman.
He wouldn't have put it out there, and he wouldn't have put Hall of Famer in question in quotes. Why would he put it in quotes, Chris?
I can't believe somebody working in sports would actually think Ryan Fitzpatrick is better than Troy Aikman.
This is the thing that shocked me, though, and this is why I'm shocked. Why would Troy Aikman even validate it by you know what I mean? Even sending, who cares? You're a Hall of Famer. You won 3 Super Bowls. You're the lead color man on NFL football. Why do you care if someone even puts that out? I wouldn't even dignify it with even addressing it or responding to it.
Yeah, it may, you know, that's a good point. I don't know if Troy knows the guy or, you know, maybe follows him and saw the tweet or, you know, I don't know. It didn't turn into a big, you know, beef. But either way, this is ridiculous. And again, I'm going to give the guy, Joe DiBiase, more credit. I don't think I can't believe he would think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a better three-point shooter. I'm sorry, is a better quarterback than Troy Aikman. I'm sorry.
No.
But you're right. He put it out there. He put it out there. I was looking at some three-pointers. Larry Bird's career average from three was 37%.
But the three wasn't
as relevant as 50 guys that shot better than that from three last season. So that's my point. I mean, it's like saying, hey, Tony Snell shot 40% from three last year.
It's a different game,
though. Larry Bird shot 37% for his career. I know, I'm saying, right. I'm being facetious, right. But I'm saying you can't compare numbers just without the context. And that's really what the guy was doing. And, you know, I think Troy handled it well. You're right, he could have ignored it, but I'm fine with it because it was just absolutely ridiculous.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
This is a guy, Rob, you and I have known for decades.
And what was colleagues with our guest coming up.
Yes, and he does a terrific job. He's an ESPN senior writer, and you can follow him on Twitter at @Ian_O'Connor. And he's got a book coming out next week in store September 25th called Belichick, The Makings of the Greatest Coach of All Time. Ian, welcome to the iCouple. Great to have you on.
Hey, guys. Congratulations on the show, and it's great to be with you.
Well, appreciate it. And Chris, Ian and I go way back to when we first started in New York, Ian, back in what, the 86, 87, around that time?
Yeah, I was a little later than that, but yeah, that's about right. And
he's always trying to make everybody old age, Ian.
Yeah, I'm old enough. I don't want Rob adding 2 years to my 54 years. Yeah.
Somewhere around there, definitely.
Now, those are magical times, man. I really always love being in your presence. You're one of the true gentlemen in the industry, and you're going into the Hall of Fame, right? I just saw that come across social media recently. Are you going into the NABJ,
they named me Sports Journalist of the Year this past year. It was in Detroit, so it was a great honor. And thanks, Ian, for mentioning.
Yeah, no, that was great. You deserve it. Thank you.
Well, Ian, of course, this book, man, excerpts were released earlier this week, and it just looks terrific. Let's just start, you know, with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. You wrote that it looks like Brady, you know, almost didn't come back this year, that he wants a divorce from Bill Belichick. What is the state of their relationship? How would you describe it?
I think, Chris, now it's functioning, and it was always just a pretty cold transactional relationship. There was never any warmth or love. They never went out to dinner. The love in that relationship that Brady gets is from Robert Kraft. They live next to each other. They're very close. But with Belichick, it's been all business, and that wore him down after 17, 18 years of being coached that way. When Belichick took away team access to Brady's business partner and fitness coach, Alex Guerrero, that created a real problem. And when Belichick benched Malcolm Butler, you know, Malcolm Butler meant a ton to Brady's legacy, because if he doesn't intercept that ball against Seattle, now Brady's 3-3 in the big game. He hasn't won one in 10 years. That Butler interception changed both of those legacies, Belichick and Brady. So he was not happy at all with that decision and how it impacted that game. And in the offseason, I was told by sources as late March, he was seriously thinking about not playing for Belichick again. He wanted to play for the fans. He wanted to play for the uniform, for New England, for Josh McDaniels, and for Kraft. But I think the reason ultimately he decided to come back was after he inspired them to trade Garoppolo, he realized he had no choice, that if he walked away, the fans would have turned on him.
When you talk about that, I don't think what Belichick was trying to do, and I know there's a competition between the two, is it the system that Belichick did, or is it Brady being this great quarterback? Which one is it that wags the dog that is the Patriots? But Belichick going to get a younger quarterback and groom him to be ready, for most people, makes sense. Joe Montana didn't finish in San Francisco. Neither did Peyton Manning. Do you know what I mean? This is not unusual what Belichick was doing.
Right. No, I'm not saying it was unusual, Rob. In 2014, when he drafted Garoppolo, go back and look at Brady's numbers in 2012 and 13. They were diminishing. And his arm strength was down. Coaches in practice were really concerned. He never threw the go route. And I think one of the reasons why they kept bringing in intermediate and receivers and going with the double tight end set was his inability to really go deep. And so the drafting of Garoppolo almost seemed to light a new flame under Brady, because obviously he wins it all in 14, wins it all again in 16 with the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history, and then is the MVP of the league. I agree with you. When he drafted Garoppolo, that was a smart decision. And that night after he drafted him, he cited Tom's age and his contract status, and he said, "I'd rather be early than late at this position." But that doesn't mean Brady was happy about it. Brady is a very proud and sometimes sensitive guy, and he remembered at Michigan, he waited and waited and waited to be the starter. Lloyd Carr then brought in everybody's All-American, Drew Henson, and I think he looked at Garoppolo as another Drew Henson. And he was very sensitive to that.
Ian, one of the best excerpts I read was, it was unbelievable, was that the coaching staff of the Patriots feels like there's about 15 quarterbacks out there, the top 15 quarterbacks in the league. You put any of them in New England, and they could lead them to Super Bowls like Tom Brady has. There's a strong implication there that they don't really think Tom Brady's anything special. Is that true?
I think that quote, Chris, comes from that period I was just talking about. When the book comes out, I think that was lost yesterday in the discussion. Okay. When some of the excerpts came out, people missed that point, that it was when Brady's arm strength was diminishing and his numbers were getting worse, and the draft pick was made. The coaching staff at that point, according to a source who's right in the middle of it, told me that they understood that Brady was a very, very good player, and that not anybody you could plug in there would win multiple championships. But Brady hadn't won the big one in a while, and they did feel that if you gave us one of those top 15 players in that system, we would win at a high and consistent level. Does that mean three, because Brady had three at that point? I don't know about that, but certainly one, if not two. And they did feel that way now. Do they feel that way now, and the staff has changed a little bit from that? I would say no. My understanding is they don't feel that way now, but it was a different time and place in Foxborough at the end of that 2013 season. Again, go back and look at the stats. Things seemed to be trending the wrong way for Brady, and then all of a sudden he kicked it into a new gear.
You're listening to The Odd Couple on Fox Sports Radio. Our guest is Ian O'Connor, ESPN senior writer and author of Belichick, The Makings of the Greatest Coach of All Time, in stores coming up September 25th. And when we talk about Brady, I always say Brady might be the most accomplished because of the five Super Bowl wins and whatnot, but Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback. Would you buy into that as far as ability and what he can do with the football?
Well, from a physical talent standpoint, Aaron Rodgers reminds me of a modern Roger Staubach. I've always thought that Staubach was one of my favorite players. He was my favorite player growing up. And I see Rodgers as a better version of him. And from a talent standpoint, when you include the arm and everything else, the mobility, I think he's probably the most talented guy ever to do it. Now, from a physical standpoint, it's hard to say that anyone was more impressive than Cam Newton playing that position, right? When you look at everything he has, now he doesn't have the ring, so you can't give him that title. But I don't know if a more physically talented person other than Cam Newton has ever played that position. Rodgers has accomplished more, and certainly Brady has as well. But if you ask me today, you've got to win one game, I still would go with Brady because I do think he's got an intangible there that separates him from everybody else, including Rodgers, man. I was there. He had a chance to win that second ring that year. They went 15-1, and he lost that first playoff game to the Giants. I know Tom Brady has lost two Super Bowls to the Giants, but to me, Brady's not losing that game, and Rodgers got some drops and some bad luck in that game. I understand that, but I think that Tom Brady, with the same set of circumstances in Green Bay, would have that second ring. And I do think he's got an intangible that separates him from everyone else playing that position.
Aaron Rodgers probably would have a couple more wins if they had the other team's defensive signals as well. So that probably would help out a little bit.
Well, wait a second. Rodgers lost that game after Spygate. But,
yeah,
I will say this, Rob. If you put Rodgers under Belichick in that Patriot Way system, he's got what? He's got to have three rings by now,
No doubt about it.
No question. No question. Well, you mentioned earlier Malcolm Butler and the benching in the Super Bowl. In all your research and talking to all these different people, did you get any explanation for why Belichick did that? And, you know, what are some of the various theories that are floating around New England as to what in the world was going through Belichick's head?
Well, it starts, Chris, with him being sick. That was a bad start at the beginning of that week, right? So now he's a day behind getting to Minneapolis. And he admitted to ESPN.com that he didn't have a great week of practice, in part because he was sick. So that was part of it. And I don't think I heard the different rumors that were out there about what he did and didn't do that week away from the field. I did not have enough sourcing to go with any of that. I think it was strategic. I think Belichick, in talking to some people, and this is educated speculation, it was the opposite of what he did as the Giants defensive coordinator against Buffalo in the 90-91 Super Bowl, where he decided the game plan was take the ball out of Jim Kelly's hands and let's allow Thurman Thomas to run for over 100 yards and turn a fast-breaking full-court basketball team into a half-court team. That was the Giants' style. They wanted to play a half-court game, and they did. And so, in this case, he looked at those two powerful running backs of the Eagles, right? And he looked at his defense and said, no Hightower, Ninkovich retired, Chandler Jones isn't here anymore, Jamie Collins is gone. He had such a talent drain in that defense. I really think he was more concerned about those running backs than he was Nick Foles. So he decided, let's force them to beat us with Foles throwing the ball. And in the first half, that plan didn't work. Belichick has done a lot of unconventional things, so I don't necessarily blame him for starting the game without Butler. But at halftime, at a Super Bowl, when you have forever to make an adjustment, and he's the best adjustment coach of all time, how do you not go back to Butler in the second half? And to me, that's where he made the big mistake.
No doubt about it. Ian, last thing, I think it's hard to look at Belichick and just say he's one of the greatest coach of all time. When he has that spy gate hanging around his neck, how do you just maneuver around that? And there's always been questions about what the Patriots do, spy gate, deflate gate. There's other allegations. Eric Mangini went out and talked about how they do their business. Josh McDaniels got fired in Denver for doing taping teams' walkthroughs. You know what I mean? How can you say Belichick is the greatest of all time, and why doesn't he get dinged because of those other things that go along with his winning?
Oh, I dinged him in the book for that. And in fact, I've got new Spygate details, Rob, about the day the camera was confiscated, that there was an FBI agent involved. There was an undercover cop.
Wow.
Who was involved with infiltrating the Genovese crime family. He was involved in it. There was another New Jersey State trooper. And they're the ones who actually refereed an argument between the Jets and Patriots over the camera, and they confiscated the camera and gave it to the NFL, and that started Spygate. But I didn't give him a pass on that. I think his point in looking at it and studying it for 3 years and talking to 350 people, I don't think Spygate gave him a significant advantage. I really don't. I think it was an advantage. But if you think about it, he's right. He said, look, 80,000 people can see the coach's signals. All we did was we filmed them. But everyone in the building can see the signals. And if you had a guy in the booth looking at the signals, he would write it down and then match it up to the film later. So the advantage, I don't know how significant it really was. You get different people in the NFL saying different things about that. But I do believe this, Rob, and I think you disagree with me on this, and that's fine. If you took away Spygate and if Deflategate happened and some of the other things, I still think they have five rings. I really do.
They might, and I guess my only thing is when you're that great, your name shouldn't be marred. He was also fined $500,000, right? $500,000 and had picks taken away. So it had to be, bad enough for that he was punished more so than any other coach in the history of the NFL.
Well,
that's all.
I'll say this. If you have that opinion, I think that's a fair opinion. Okay, I don't share it, but I think if you feel that way, and I know other people who do as well, I think that's a very fair opinion.
Ian, great stuff, man.
Good luck with the book.
Can't wait to get my hands on this book. It'll be in stores September 25th. Belichick, the makings of the greatest coach of all time, despite what Rob Parker says. Ian, great job, man.
Thank you, bud.
Hey, guys, you know, I've always respected both of you a great, great deal, and I really wish you luck with your show. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, Ian.